comes Gensel. He's got Crosby. Score! At 12 seconds of the second period.
Yeah, turnover by Matty Niskanen, a defenseman. That's why it's a 2-on-1. He can't get back into play. What a feed by Gensel right over to Crosby, and he wastes no time.
Drive by Mata, and that one out of the glove. Rebound! They score! The Penguins have scored again, and it is Crosby again.
Assist to Mike Sullivan. Comes right back with Crosby's line. Catches a little mismatch in the matchup situation.
Malkin stepped into there by Carlson. Emerging with this now is Oshie. Oshie dropped it. Taken and handed on to Ovechkin for a shot. He scores!
How about the big hit by John Carlson on Evgeny Malkin? Forces the turnover.
Kuznetsov wheeling again. Tried to get it there. It popped up in the air. Knifed in a lot of wheeling and stick. But now it's Niskanen. He hit. Score! Kuznetsov! Tie game!
What a tremendous pass by Matt Niskanen to Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Fantastic hockey by the Washington Capitals. Igniting the offense by putting the defense down low. Matty Niskanen, as Eddie said, slick pass.
Scott Wilson ahead. He got it on to Bonino. He scores! The backbreaker of Game 6 last spring has broken the tie in the third period.
Well, that man, Nick Bonino, again.
What a play by Scott Wilson. He heard Bonino call for the puck, and Wilson just threw it into an area.
The extra man from the bench is Williams, and a save made on that redirection by Fleury. Ovechkin gets it over to Niskanen, and a shot shrugged away by Fleury. Ovechkin, a shot flexed away by the pad of Marc-Andre Fleury. Off the tie-up, it's touched by Crosby, and a crowd gathers as the game is over. And the Penguins have won Game 1.
How about that? Added bonus for Canadian hockey fans, as it turned out. We got to see all that as well. Thank you very much to the other guys who are, I don't know what they're doing, but thank you. That was a good call. Pierre Maguire, Doc Emmerich, Eddie Olczyk last night. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690, along with Rod Francis. Sean Coleman is in for Mitch Gallo this night. Pierre's back in St. Louis.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
Excellent, Mitch. How you doing?
I'm fine. That was pretty intense last night.
Oh, that's just going to keep getting more intense. Kind of like the series I'm at right now between St. Louis and Nashville, but I would say that one's going to take on a life of its own. Pittsburgh and Washington are really going to get nasty, super skilled, and obviously Marc-Andre Fleury was a huge story in game number one.
Well, I looked at this series, and as I said, I think the Penguins are going to have more trouble beating Holtby than they did Bobrovsky, but the Penguins had the better goaltender, no question about it last night, and I don't know how long it'll last. I know a lot of people listening think it could last all the way, but however you feel about what they're going to do and how it's going to end up for them, I don't know anybody in hockey who's not happy for Marc-Andre Fleury right now.
Oh, I don't know anybody, unless you have to play against him. I don't know anybody that's not happy for him. Absolutely agree with that. He's one of the more personable people in the game. You should see, just whether you talk to Sidney Crosby on the record or behind the scenes, you know, that's one of his best friends. And he's just tickled pink that obviously Marc-Andre has stood up and delivered. And I can tell you, there was a point this year, probably within 2 to 3 weeks of the trade deadline, I forget where I was doing a game, but he skated up to me in the warm-up, and he usually does that. He usually comes over, and we talk. We talk in French. We talk in English. We have really nice chats. And he said, "Where do you think I'm going to end up?" And I said, "I don't know, but if I were the Dallas Stars, I'd be all over here trying to get you." And he just said, "It wouldn't be a bad place." And I'm telling you, that was within 2 to 3 weeks of the trade deadline, because the rumors were out there. It was really apparent. And everybody knew they were going to have issues with the salary cap going forward, and obviously with the expansion draft coming up this summer. Sometimes the best moves you make are the ones you don't make. And this was one they were really wise that they didn't trade him.
Ovechkin led it back across, and there's shot by Schmidt. Save made by Fleury. Scramble there in front. Still a big pileup. The puck is still loose underneath of one of the Penguins players. Still they're battling for it. And we get Ahold to play. Not yet. It's loose, and a shot by Carlson. It's saved by Fleury. He's without his stick. He makes another save. It's still another save. And
That's one of the craziest scrambles you'll ever see.
Really was. And, you know, it's interesting. Fleury, after the game, said that was about as much fun as he's had playing goal. He didn't have a stick. He was all over the place. It was almost like he was playing ball hockey, you know, somewhere in Westmount or TMR or Villamard. You know, he's just out in the street playing ball hockey, making saves. It was phenomenal.
I like how you started in Westmount there. Good one there, Pierre. And eventually going down the hill. Pierre's in, we'll get to St. Louis and Nashville in a second, but do you think, now I don't want to, if people haven't seen the quote or heard the quote, I don't want people to think that Alex Ovechkin was whining about the officials, but he did in his post-game comments point out that Pittsburgh didn't have a penalty.
Well, he wasn't the only person from the Capitals organization that pointed that out. I was in the hallway talking to an agent, and I won't tell you his name because he handles a lot of clients around the league, and very prominent members of the Capitals organization and their significant others and or wives not pleased with the officiating and bringing it up to me right in front of this gentleman. And I'm like, you know what? I have no control over it. I wish I did. I don't. They were, as a group, not pleased with the officiating last night.
Yeah, it's become a bit of an issue.
For people that say in the playoffs, you know, you've got to let the players decide the game. What does that even mean? So that means take the rule book, throw it in the garbage, and let the less skilled players make more of an impact than the highly skilled players. Like, how does that make any sense?
You want to try to answer that, Pierre, from
I'm
Ray?
With him. No, because I'm with Ray. I'm totally with Ray on that. You know, to me, if you take away a scoring opportunity, whether you hook, you hold, you tackle, that's a penalty. We have zero tolerance, or supposedly zero tolerance on obstruction. I made the point last night, there were so many gathering of the clans, like the late Danny Gallivan and Dick Irvin used to say on the radio in Montreal when we were kids growing up, that I couldn't believe there were only matching minors being called. I mean, there were shenanigans beyond belief, behind the play, during the play, in the play. I mean, it was, they let them go. I mean, it was Hudson Bay rules pretty much in that game, and I'm not sure that benefits either team. You know, last night, obviously, Pittsburgh took advantage, but I'm not sure that benefits either team.
No, I can't stand those mindless skirmishes as well, Pierre. And I know the players, you know, they go through the face wash and all that, and they probably say that it gets the juices flowing, so to speak. But as a viewer and as a hockey fan, I'd rather see the referee take one player and just stop it there.
Well, I think that's probably where they're going to go as we go along here. I think we shared it. I thought there would be two series that would be very nasty. This one in St. Louis with Nashville and the one in Washington with Pittsburgh. Those are the two that are terribly mean-spirited rivalries that have lasted for a long time.
Something else I discovered about Pierre McGuire watching that feed last night is that I didn't know you're a big soccer fan, European soccer fan, Pierre.
I watch. You know what? Gord got me into watching, probably going back to 05. When we were over there for 2 months because of the lockout. So we watched tons of football or soccer, depending on what you want to call it. And then there's a show on NBC Sports Network. Rebecca Lowe is outstanding. She really is. She's awesome. She's the host of the show. And NBC owns the rights to the premiership. And so I watch it a lot. I like it because it's on in the afternoon when I'm at the rink doing my work or working out. So I enjoy watching it.
Burrows below the goal line. Back to DeZingle. DeZingle to the point. Carlson. There's a quick shot, knockdown, loose puck, bouncing, scores! Down the backside, bearing the puck, DeZingle ties the game at one. Hoffman in the corner, slides it back of the net, long the boards, Carlson's come down the wall, tries to fire it through, it's knocked down, gets it again, scores! Eric Carlson from an impossible angle, gives Ottawa the lead!
Got a great bounce, and those are always nice to get, and I think that the amount of pucks that we put in the net, you know, we were well deserved of one of those.
Well, that game last night, very reminiscent to the way the Canadiens-Rangers series started, but unlike the Canadiens, the Ottawa Senators were able to get a couple of pucks by Henrik Lundqvist, who ended up with 41 saves.
Well, first of all, the goal by Carlson, that reminded me so much of Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final of 1992 with Mario shooting it off the backside of Eddie Belfour to get the Pittsburgh Penguins back into that Game 1 and eventually win it. That's pretty much what it was, except obviously there were a few more bodies in the way for Hank to deal with. There were really no bodies in the way for Belfour to deal with it at that time in 92. The other thing that interested me there, or I found interesting was that Carlson grew up really worshiping at the altar of Henrik Lundqvist. You know, they're both from the same club team for London, Sweden, and it was Carlson that, you know, grew up watching Henrik Lundqvist develop over time and eventually become a tremendous goalie. And I think we talked about this yesterday. You can make the argument that Carlson's the best player in the league right now. You can make the argument. It doesn't mean that he is, but you could definitely debate it and win the debate if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You could also make the argument that Lundqvist is playing as well as he's ever played. And I really think, even though he's had some amazing years in this league, I personally think his two best years, 05 season during the lockout in Sweden for Frölunda, their team won. They beat Färjestad in the final. I happen to be there. Sheldon Suri and Zdeno Chara were two key components of that Färjestad team. Lundqvist was unbelievable. And then he went to the World Championship, and he played really well there. And then the next year, Sweden won the Olympic gold medal in Torino, and he was a huge part of that. So I personally think that's the best he ever played. And I have to tell you, Mitch, going into the playoffs this year, he was playing like that for the Rangers. You could see he's at another level. So this still has a long way to go.
Well, as you know, because part of it was a discussion with you, but with Mitch Gallo and Rod Francis and out at FanJam, a lot of people kept waiting for Henrik Lundqvist to slip back into the guy who had a 9-10 save percentage. It was clear from game one on that he was locked in, and I mentioned that you're not, if you're waiting for one of these, you know, games where he lets in two or three weak ones, he's as focused as he looks when he led them to the final against LA. That it's not happening.
I agree. Still, it's going to be, I think that's going to be a long, arduous series. Obviously, the Rangers still aren't in trouble. They haven't lost on home ice. One of their strengths, obviously, is playing on the road. They lost game one. It was a tight game. I give Ottawa a lot of credit. Mitch, we talked about it. And I'm staying with it. They were my dark horse from January on. I've been really impressed with the job that Guy Boucher, Mark Crawford, Marty Raymond, what they've done with that, and Robbie Cookson, the other assistant, what they've done there with that team has been awesome. They definitely have an identity. They're a frustrating team to play against because of the way they play in the neutral zone. And if you don't get the lead against Ottawa, chances are you're not going to win because it's really tough to come from behind against that team.
Certainly accustomed to seeing at playoff time, kind of every game kind of develops its own identity and its own flow. But more than ever, Pierre, it's like every period now is like its own mini game where one team often comes out and dominates a period, and then the other team finds a way to storm back and they play 20 minutes. You don't really see 60 solid minutes anymore from one team.
That's a really good point. I saw that the other night here. In St. Louis, in the Nashville St. Louis series. Definitely saw it last night in the Washington-Pittsburgh game one. And you can make the argument it was definitely apparent, especially in the first period in the Ottawa Rangers series. And even in the Anaheim-Edmonton series, I mean, if you think about it, the first 40 minutes, that was a pretty good show for Edmonton. And then the third period was, or for Anaheim, excuse me, and the third period was a tremendous show for Edmonton. So, no, I think that's a relevant point. I really do.
Pierre McGuire will touch on the Habs in just a moment. He is in St. Louis prior to Game 2 of the Blues and Predators on Melnick in the afternoon, TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, sitting in for Mitch Gallo today. Sean Coleman.
Pierre, last night we saw a number of chaotic line changes. I think the Capitals had a 7-on-1 against Olli Määttä at one point. The Rangers, the Sens, they were called for too many men on the ice. Does matching lines suddenly become an adventure come playoff time?
Oh, it always has been. The biggest thing for the visiting team, you're trying to get the matchup. You don't obviously get it as easily because you don't get last change. And usually there's between 60 and 80 faceoffs in a game. So that affects, you know, how you plan as a coach. I think the biggest thing, and this is something I learned from Scotty Bowman a long time ago, it's easier to change two players in a matchup situation than it is to change five. So when you're the road team, it probably behooves you to be better in terms of matching from the back end. It's also an easier match than to try to match everybody, and I think that's one of the things that teams need to pay attention to. But I would agree. I think we've had some very chaotic line changes. Hey, I know on the Pittsburgh bench there was one really late change, bad change. Washington almost took advantage of it in the second period on the long change, and there was a whole lot of screaming and yelling on the Pittsburgh bench, I can tell you that.
Yeah, but as you pointed out, he also was able to pull off a change on the fly to get the matchup that he wanted, and he got Crosby out there who scored.
Yeah, against the third defensive pairing for the Washington Capitals, absolutely true, and that's why I brought it up. I mean, I try to watch the game between the benches if I was coaching both teams. It kind of becomes a chess match, especially with two of the better guys. I think Sullivan's one of the most improved guys in the league. The guy, Mike, coaches Pittsburgh, and Trotz has been good at that for a long time. He's got a real capable assistant. Todd Reardon changes the defense for him. And Jacques Martin is a guy changing the defense for Pittsburgh. So it's a pretty interesting chess match. But what Mike did last night, and I asked him about it, and he didn't want to really take credit for it, but it was on him. He did it. He rolled his four lines through the first period, and then in the second period to start, after they scored, he came right back with Crosby off a live puck, off a play, a game in play. And he caught Washington, and it was really apparent, and that was a huge goal in the game.
Earlier today in St. Louis, where the Blues need to win to even up the series, otherwise they're going to Nashville down 0-2.
You look at our first round against Minnesota and a lot of the numbers, we're big believers in that, in the puck possession and the analytics and whatnot. The most important analytics and the most important stats are goals for and against and wins and losses. And quite often when a team is trailing, they're going to press a little bit more, and they're going to generate more scoring opportunities or more shots or more possession time. We saw that in our last series, and I think we saw that last game as well.
Finally, somebody says that in public.
Well, he's not talking about scouting. He's talking about teams. There's a difference. Goals for, goals against. That's what he's talking about.
Well, he was asked because Minnesota fired so many shots their way, right? And they're saying, well, they own the territorial advantage throughout the entire series. And I think he correctly pointed out, yes, Minnesota did carry a lot of the play, but we also led. And you play differently when you're protecting a lead.
Well, plus people create systems that are different, and they evolve over time. Some are bend but don't break. Others are super aggressive. Others are predicated on cycle play and forcing the other team to defend. It depends on the type of player that you have, and that's where coaches become so creative. I'll go back to 06, coming out of the lockout in 05, and I know it's a long time for the young ones. You should listen to this. I thought Craig McTavish was the most creative coach that year in the playoffs, and he took a team that had no right winning. They were an 8 seed. And they eventually got to the Stanley Cup final and lost a Game 7 on the road in Carolina to lose a first cup coming out of the lockout in the new rules. And the reason why his team was able to do that, he created so many different scenarios and different games in terms of systems and matchups and neutral zone coverage and end zone coverage and penalty kill situation. It was phenomenal to watch, and they kept making it. I call him the most creative coach that playoff year, and he got his team to the final. So you can do a lot of stuff if you're a smart guy. You can do a ton of stuff if you're a smart guy. The biggest thing is selling it to your players. That's the key.
So in addition to staying out of the penalty box tonight, what do you look for from St. Louis to try to even up this series?
Well, I think they're going to try to really get physical. You know, Peter Laviolette, I thought, did a tremendous job in Game 1 changing his lineup and putting some hammers in there, one of them being Cody McLeod. Who I thought had a very solid. They were trying to stabilize Ryan Reeves, Kyle Brodziak, and Scotty Upshaw, maybe one of the more productive fourth lines in the Western Conference. I still think the best one when they had Wilson on it was in Washington with Deagle and Winnick and Wilson, but Wilson's moved up to play with Lars Eller. But I think that was smart coaching by Laviolette. I would say St. Louis will be physical, and I think more than anything, they'll look to really try to jump their defense into the offense, especially Parayko and Pietrangelo, two of their better right-handed shooting defensemen. They love to jump in, and if those guys can take advantage of their shooting ability, that could create some problems for Nashville.
8 o'clock tonight, followed at 10:30.
I think we've all put that trade behind us. It seems to keep coming up from out in all of those seats. And you know, we're in the middle of a tough, grinding series, and we've got to get over the trade. It's not fair to Taylor Hall. It's not fair to Adam. It's about the two teams that are playing now, and he's done a good job of fitting our team, and he's left his mark. He's an Oiler now, and we wouldn't expect any less from him moving forward.
Tired of answering questions about the trade, much like some fans here are tired of hearing about PK Subban and Shea Weber, but what do you look for? Again, Anaheim is I love what Randy Carlyle said. Some of them were complaining about the penalties.
All in all, hey, you can't blame the referees because we high-stick somebody, or we stuck our stick in somebody's feet, or we had a free hand and grabbed somebody. There's no defending of that. Dumb.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do. You never give your guys a reason to have a cop-out. You know, you never do. And again, that's old school. People that are fans of the Montreal Canadiens, that was created by a lot of the brain trust that was there, whether it was Frank Selke Sr., whether it was Sam Pollock, whether it was the late Dick Irvin Sr., Toll Blake, Scotty Bowman. That was their mantra, you know, and that's important. You don't let your guys off the hook. If they took a penalty, they took a penalty. Stop whining and play right. That's the best way to do it. I would say for Anaheim, don't let your guard down, and I don't think they will. I think this is going to be another one of those long series. If they do let their guard down and they lose, they're in trouble. They're in huge trouble.
Finishing up with Pierre McGuire on site in St. Louis for Game 2, Predators and Blues tonight. Earlier today on the Friday Scrum edition of Habs Lunch, replayed in its entirety between 6 and 7.
And he's going to tune out that negativity, and he's got a hard time with it because we know that it gets to Max. And I just get the feeling that Max probably said, yeah, you know, I go home and I'm probably not in a good mood, and it's affecting this.
What is that? That's not what I expected. That is Tony Marinaro and Knuckles in the background on Max Pacioretty. Pierre, one of the things we were kicking around in relation to how it went in the playoffs, and of course Pacioretty not scoring, and we all recognize they need help down the middle. Max Pacioretty has 2 years to go on a contract, on a very right. friendly, cap-friendly contract. You right. talked this week about, in terms of an offer sheet, the Canadiens don't have enough assets. They need more almost NHL-ready younger players.
Yep.
Could you see a scenario where another team that needs goals would make a pitch for Pacioretty, and the Canadiens, as part of that deal, would replenish some of what they obviously don't have, and somehow, some way, find those goals somewhere else?
Well, I think it'll be hard to find the goals somewhere else. They still have, some major issues to deal with. You talk about the center ice position. They've got to deal with the Galchenyuk situation. They've got to deal with the Beaulieu situation. If they put Max out to market, I'm sure there'll be people that will be very interested in trying to procure him. I don't know why this went so south on him in such a hurry. He had 35 goals. He had a tremendous year. I don't think people realize Ryan McDonough's done this to a lot of people, not just Max Pacioretty. So I'm going to stand up and defend Max Pacioretty. Do I think he had a good playoff? No. But do I think he tried? Yeah, especially if you look at what he did in the deciding game, trying to fight Jimmy Vesey and get his team going. He tried it. That's not in his character. That's not in his DNA. That's not what he's about as a player. But he did it because he was trying to lead. He was trying to get his team going. I'm going to support Max 100%. Do I think that there'd be teams that would be interested? I don't think. I know.
Could they get a quality younger centerman? In such a deal like that?
Give me a name.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, if you told me Pacioretty for Barkov, I'd say no. If you told me Pacioretty for Trocheck, I'd say probably not. But I wouldn't say completely no. But, I mean, you have to give me a name. If you said Pacioretty for Duchesne, I'd say no.
So that's three no's. Go ahead, Rod. Rod's got a name.
How about player you saw last night, Kuznetsov?
No. They got to sign him. He's a restricted free agent. I think they're going to save their assets to try to sign him. They got a ton of guys that are either restricted or unrestricted. One of them is Carl Alsner, and I know they don't want to lose him, but I think they probably will. It's not their fault. It's a cap-related thing. I think that they want to keep that 1-2 punch with Kuznetsov and Backstrom, and I'd be surprised if they moved him.
What do you call that goal celebration by Kuznetsov? What do you call that?
I don't know. I just say he wants to fly like an eagle. I don't know.
Fly like an eagle. Steve Miller, 1975. Yeah. You got it.
There you go. There you go. He wants to fly like an eagle.
All right. Are you in Ottawa tomorrow by any chance? Are you doing that?
No, tomorrow I'm in Washington tomorrow. I'm in
okay.
Washington
yeah.
tomorrow.
So,
and then Sunday afternoon, quick turnaround, Sunday afternoon in Nashville.
Okay, so tomorrow, 3 o'clock, Game 2, Ottawa and the Rangers on NBC, but not with Pierre. It's great to be able to watch you last night.
Oh, thanks, Mitch. I appreciate it. We're on the big NBC Saturday night and also Sunday afternoon.
All right.
Good.
Have a lot to talk about when we come back on Monday at 5:05.
Yes, I'll be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future.
Thank you, Pierre.
Would he and his agent go and say, all right, what's the plan here? What's the plan over the next 3-4 years? Are we going to still not get anybody?
You think Price would ask them that?
Yeah,
is that what
in that
saying?
Interview. In that, of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. And absolutely. Then,
what was that? What the heck was that? I didn't remember that from earlier.
And he's going to tune out that negativity, and he's got a hard time with it because we know that it gets to Max. And I just get the feeling that Max probably said, yeah, you know, I go home, and I'm probably not in a good mood, and it's affecting this.
Tony doesn't miss a beat. I bet you Tony's hearing this for the first time. Yeah, so once again, the sliding scrum scale. We're going to get into this before 6 a little bit more because it required a lot of mental maneuvering by Rod to reach our sliding scrum scale today. You'll have to listen live between 6 and 7 ahead of the Blue Jays in Tampa.